Now, more Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Sutherland Studios. Gearing up for what should be another intriguing night of NBA basketball. Hey, look, I'm the first to take accountability when I have a take that was completely off. And last week, I was complaining about the lack of parity in these conference semis. I thought they would all be short series. I didn't see Dallas getting one, maybe one at the absolute most over OKC. As we enter tonight's game, they're looking for a 3-1 series lead. Boston still has control, but all of a sudden, the Minnesota-Denver series is completely flipped, as is the New York-Indiana series. We'll talk about all that and more. Joining us right now, as he does each Monday over the phone, we have the James Holis. James, it's great to get you back on. And what a difference, not even a week, what a difference 5 days makes.
Man, like the old rap song used to say, it was all good just a week ago. That's why this is my favorite thing about the NBA. In a long form, we can watch things evolve and change. It's not a one-game series where football, you know, anything can happen. But this has just been a roller coaster ride. It's been fun to watch.
I want to start with the world champion Nuggets. I think it's a great place to start. They lose game one and two at home, and game two was laughable. It was a stinker. And we've seen the writing on the wall before when a defending champ runs into a buzzsaw, and that's exactly what Minnesota looked like, a buzzsaw. And then I start, you know, looking at it and saying, well, you played a lot of extra basketball last year. It's not exactly a group that's accustomed to that. Jamal Murray doesn't look healthy. Jokic looks a little slow. The Timberwolves are just clicking on all levels. All of a sudden, Jamal Murray looks like Jamal Murray from a year ago when Denver won the NBA championship. And again, going on the road and grabbing two wins against this Minnesota team, it just seemed unfathomable at this time a week ago.
I mean, like, you know, people talk about the disease of Moore and the Nuggets, you know, just not having maybe enough depth and the Timberwolves just being hungrier and more athletic. And after that second game, the pundits, you and I included, we didn't see a way out for Denver. And the way out had just been play harder and play better. That's literally it. Obviously, Jamal Murray, whatever, whatever physical trainer he's working with who was working his treatment between games two and three, not just give them a raise, like they need like a lifetime freaking stipend or something, because we thought Jamal Murray was cooked. He looks like, you know, he couldn't get past anybody, he couldn't get over anybody, can create no separation. These last two games, he's been, like you said, Jamal Murray of old, where the Nuggets obviously got embarrassed in game two. They're playing with purpose, they're playing more crisp, they're hitting first. And this is where the Timberwolves' lack of experience comes in, because you can see now that they're on their heels, they don't know how quite to react. So, yeah, man, that series looked like it was dead in the water. It might be a laugher, and now we got 2-2. Denver snatched back home court advantage. Let's go.
One of the things I would point out in Game 4 is that Denver managed to overcome a game where Minnesota played well. You win this game on the road despite Anthony Edwards going off for 44 points. I know Cat didn't play his best game. That's probably the one glaring spot. And there's context to everything, right? But if you go back and you look at that game, Cat was probably the only downfall in that Game 4 loss. I don't think he was very efficient from the field. I think he forced a few things. If I'm not mistaken, he got 1 3-point jumper in the entire game. Couldn't get to the foul line. Like, Cat was the only guy that I could look at and say, yep, this was a down spot for the Minnesota Timberwolves. So when you take all that into consideration, it's probably a game they should have won. Yet Jokic was simply incredible.
I'm going to give you two things, because you're absolutely right. Cat was abysmal in the first half. The second half, he was a little more aggressive, but he still wasn't great. One, I'm going to say Rudy Gobert almost single-handedly tanked that game. From about the 4-minute, 21-second mark until the end of the game, he had two turnovers, an offensive foul, and he had a loose ball foul. He missed two free throws, and he had one more thing. I think he committed like a bad foul in the back. He almost single-handedly blew that game for them. Obviously, he's not the reason. Another thing, this is where the playoffs is all about, the margins, right? NBA coaches talk all about always the margins, win the games in the margins. The Timberwolves had a chance to cut it to either 4 or 5 with 19 seconds left in the second quarter. KCP hit a 3. Timberwolves came down and turned it over. Michael Porter Jr. dunked. And then they had the other turnover that Jamal Murray hit a 3-quarter court shot. It was an 8-point swing that went from the score of that 7. They got a stop. It would have been down to 5 or 4. and the lead was at 15 in the blink of an eye. Literally 19 seconds turnaround. So that is what can win or lose you a game. And it was eight consecutive points by the Nuggets, and they lost the game by eight. You can't make this stuff up. What a thrilling game!
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Would you be concerned if you're a Minnesota Timberwolves fan that you lose a game at home when Michael Porter Jr. he played 35 minutes in Game Four and was a non-factor offensively in that game? He was a non-factor. James did nothing offensively in that game.
Yes, you're definitely concerned because the Timberwolves, they had to win one of these two, I think, to really have themselves in the driver's seat. And for having them lose both home games is just horrific for them. And this one was winnable, like you said. So, yeah, now that Joker is playing back to the MVP form, Jamal Murray is looking like an all-star game. And a guy like Aaron Gordon can really control the game on both ends the way he was. He had a great game offensively and defensively. So Michael Porter Jr. now is just a bonus. And you can't hope on him going home and playing like this. So I don't know how much people believe in momentum. I believe in it for a game. But, I mean, I can feel it this series. The first two games was all Timberwolves. And then these last two games have been all Nuggets, even the way they won the game four. So, this is where experience comes in. I think the Nuggets have been there before. This might, I don't know if Timberwolves win another game. But we said that after game two about the Nuggets. So we'll see.
Now, I'm a huge believer in momentum. I'm a huge believer in it. And I do believe it can carry over game to game. I think that's why you see closeout games sometimes, they get outlandish. You know, you see 20-point, 25-point wins. Doesn't matter if it's game four, game five, game six. We see a lot of blowouts in closeout games. And I think we get that for a reason, right? Because of the momentum. I'm a huge believer in it. And if we talk about the other series that is in an off night, Indiana, same thing. They lose a couple of games to New York. You and I talked about the officiating. We talked about it being a black guy for the league. Rick Carlisle was very, very outgoing. He was very, very open in expressing this. I think he did open up the league's eyes a little bit, but throw the officiating aside. We go back to game four, the most recent outing. Indiana was dominant from the very beginning of this. They opened up a 20-point lead by the end of the first quarter in this game. Here's another series that is definitely flipped in the form of momentum. And I say in the form of momentum because games one and two were competitive, regardless of the outcome. Game ones and two, they were competitive. It wasn't the same conversation as Minnesota-Denver.
So I'm going to say this one is a little more predictable because it's a battle of attrition when you're dealing with Tom Thibodeau. And that's not a knock on Tom. He's got them this far, but it's a blessing and a curse because playing Josh Hart 48 minutes consecutive games, going through like a six-man rotation, obviously injuries. And some people would say, well, part of those injuries is because of how hard he rides his guys. I'm not going to say that. I don't know. But first, Bogdanovich, Mitch Robinson was out. Now OG Anunoby's out. We know that Jalen Brunson's been dinged up. That kind of stuff matters. And the fact that Tom Thibodeau didn't empower his bench a little more, now you're depending on guys who just aren't really ready. And you just don't have enough guys. And these guys look exhausted. I think game four is more about the depth of the Pacers and the Pacers getting more comfortable in the series while the Knicks are just running out of gas. Brunson looked, he's been incredible, but that kind of usage and those kind of minutes, it takes a toll. It's a cumulative toll. And I think right now we're seeing that they're just out of gas. And I'd be surprised. They might have one last kick in them and, you know, maybe extend the series a little more. But I think overwhelmingly, like you said, momentum is all in the Pacers' favor right now.
You know, one guy that we have to talk about with the Indiana Pacers, and I'm not going to say it was an under-the-radar move, but I just don't feel like it's gotten the necessary pub. The deal that Indiana pulled for Pascal Siakam at the trade deadline, it's paying dividends now because he's been very good in the postseason. He was very good in Game 4. Again, I know there's context behind everything, right? You can't just pick up a box score and look at Siakam's numbers and say, yeah, he's been okay. When you watch the game, he's affecting it in numerous different ways out on the floor that a box score is not going to pick up. To me, this is a move that's just not getting enough credit, James.
I agree with you. I think he only had like 14 points in game four, but it didn't matter. And again, that battle of attrition comes into play. While he was great, he was fine no matter what. Without OG Anunoby to guard him, he's kind of running free and there's no one to even slow him down now. And then there's a trickle-down effect where whoever's guarding Obi Toppin now is having to try to guard him. Obi Toppin's getting free behind the defense. It's, you know, once the boat starts springing a leak and you put a finger in one, now you run out of fingers and toes. That's where the Knicks kind of are. But, yeah, Pascal, look, he's been there, right? He won a championship at the second banana. I don't think the Knicks, the Pacers are a championship contender, but Pascal has Tyrese to take the pressure of him having to be the guy. He can just kind of do his thing, his spin moves, his tornado shots and fallaways, And he's a good player, man. He's not quite a superstar. He's that second-tier kind of guy, but he's really good.
Again, James Hollis, our guest right now as we talk NBA playoff basketball and how each of these conference semis have really flipped. James, we'll talk about the two games tonight. We get Boston-Cleveland at 5 p.m. We'll get to that one in a second. Nightcap game tonight, 7:30, OKC-Dallas. The Thunder pick up game one. I remember I had you on before game two. I said, look, if Luka Doncic is not even going to be near healthy in this series, there's no way that Dallas is going to make this a series. I'm going to take OKC in five. Dallas grabs game two. Okay, but then they go out and they grab game three. So here they are at home, an opportunity tonight to take a 3-1 series lead. And you can almost put this series to bed if that happens. I mean, it's almost a death sentence because that would mean that Oklahoma City still has to go back to Dallas and win one more game. Their back's going to be up against the ropes the rest of the series. Marquee matchup tonight. This is the game that, in my mind, this is still a series that I could see going either way, but there's some problems all of a sudden in OKC.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm not even going to say problems because I mean, you talked about this before, too. Like, we were just going by what we saw with our eyes. We both said the same thing. If Luka's not healthy and they can't find a way to slow down the Thunder because athleticism, blah, blah, it's going to be over. Well, again, maybe he flew Jamal Murray's doctor down to work on him and get his body right because Luka looks like a different player. He's not quite 100%, but he looks way more mobile than he did in the first couple games. And, I mean, like, the key has been P.J. Washington. I'm pretty sure the game plan that they came up with for OKC, and they, you know, hey, Coach, what's his name? Coach Mark is a Dagenau. He's a great, young, smart coach. He's playing the numbers. Hey, load up on Luka. Let's try to negate Kyrie Irving. And there's going to be an outlet, and it was P.J. Washington. P.J. scored, I was wrong, 29 one game and 27 the next game. That's a lot of points for a guy that's, you know, the tertiary guy. You don't have to, they probably don't game plan for as far as scoring. And that's been the key, I think. They got to figure out a way to turn off P.J. Washington's water, as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander said, because they didn't factor that in, and he's killing them right now.
You and I were talking about some of the players that have just been awful for Dallas in the postseason. They're winning games, again, based off of the production from P.J. Washington. Tim Hardaway Jr. has been bad. Right, really the bench for Dallas has not been good in this series. It really hasn't. I mean, you're seeing the bulk of the damage being done by a Luka who's not 100%, Kyrie Irving, and P.J. Washington. That's where the bulk of the damage is coming from.
And that's the thing, though. That's the good thing about the playoffs, because most teams, as we know, they shorten the rotation for that very reason, because they know when the intensity ratchets it up, those end-of-bench guys who you're fine with the regular season playing 20 minutes, now you got to give them eight, because they'll be attacked defensively. And you can't have a five-minute stretch with a negative on the floor. So that actually kind of plays into Dallas' favor because they want to play their starters long minutes. They have three or four guys doing all the heavy lifting. I need a couple guys to hit a shot or two and be able to hold up defensively around them. And I believe this is where the Thunder's inexperience is showing up, right? Great, precocious team. That's why I said it's not a problem. They're way ahead of schedule, but we're seeing some of the things that come with being a young team in the playoffs. Even if they have the talent, they don't have the wherewithal. And again, they're not controlling the margins the way you have to control them. So, fascinating, man. I love to see this kind of thing.
I think what you just said, I don't know that you can really compare this to Minnesota, right? I think that people have it etched in their head that Minnesota's got to go through some growing pains as well. When you look at OKC's roster, you look at the roster in Minnesota, it's not even remotely the same, right? Mike Conley has been there before. Rudy Gobert has been there before. Cat is a seasoned vet. Yeah, they may have young pieces, but the rosters aren't exactly the same when you take a look at the youth based off experience and inexperience. It's not remotely the same.
You're absolutely correct, but I guess when it comes to the key players, right? Because we know that Shai's the most important guy and then Jalen Williams is the second most important guy in OKC. And Anthony Edwards, you know, this is his first real playoff. Sure, I guess he was there last year. So his first, like, meaningful deep player experience where it's really intense. And Karl-Anthony Towns doesn't have a lot of playoff experience either. You know, first-round fodder a couple of times, I think. Whatever. So, and he's Karl-Anthony Towns. Rudy Gobert is a guy who's, he's been there, but he's not going to change the game offensively, right? And even, like, even defensively, we've seen some of the same things pop up with Rudy Gobert again. He can be a kind of a liability if a team's spacing him out and moving the ball around. And he can't stop Joker. Mike Conley Jr. right now is a role player. And he's a great role player. He's been there before. He's been there with great players deep in the playoffs, but he's past his prime. So you're right. It's not the same. But just the fact of, like, the main guy's lack of experience is really showing up. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Minnesota has more guys who have been there. And guess what? They probably know that feeling. And so they might be kind of mentally in their head. They know when they're being outclassed.
James, we'll talk about the last series. We get 5 o'clock tip-off tonight, Celtics-Cavaliers. That one's coming up in just a bit. In this series, and this goes back to the momentum thing. I know you believe in momentum not really carrying over game to game. In my mind, I'm looking at what Cleveland did, as we talked about last week. Okay, they're off this come-from-behind win over Orlando. Game one, that's there for the taking for them, especially after Boston got that rest. Boston comes out, they dominate. At that point, I'm looking at the series and thinking, okay, this is a sweep. This is a four-game sweep. Cleveland comes out, they dominate Boston in game two. It would appear that Cleveland has an opportunity now to make this a series. Boston comes out, they win game three on the road. To me, even though you're hard on your Celtics, and rightfully so, I understand every point you've made. The one thing that I can say about this Boston team is that they have responded to adversity every single time it's been put in front of them this year. Every single time this team has suffered a loss in a big spot, they've rebounded in a major way, and they did it again in game three.
Yeah, you know what, man? It's just hard for me to like give them credit for responding to adversity when their adversity is they shot themselves in the foot.
Sure.
And so, like, I'm cautiously optimistic about this series still. It's Cleveland just doesn't have enough firepower. Darius Garland is just too – he's undersized, and he just – against top-level playoff defense, he's not going to dominate. So, Mitchell's going to go off for another 35, 40 points tonight. Celtics should win pretty easily as long as everybody stays healthy. I'm not concerned. My thing is more of the long-term thing of Boston doing this. They have a history of it now. I think over the last three seasons, they're like 500 at home in the playoffs. Like, that's ridiculous. They've lost, I want to say something, I think I heard they've lost six of the last eight at home in the playoffs the last 2 years. That is unacceptable. And the way they've lost two at home this year against two teams that they should are clear superior than. It's becoming a trend now, and I think other teams kind of know it. And that's the word on the Boston is that, you know, if you hit them hard early, they might lose focus, and you got a shot, no matter how talented they are. And, you know, the same core pieces are here. It's been happening for years. It's been, you know, two, three different coaches now. So it is what it is. It's part of almost like the DNA of the team. Can they shake it? Absolutely. Tatum has to wake up. But, yeah, I think, like, me and you, we'll be talking about Boston in the finals if everything goes the right way. But things can go wrong.
You mentioned Jason Tatum. How much of that do you put on him? Because if you go back to game three, Tatum and Brown were phenomenal. What they combined for? 60 points, something in that realm. I think it was 61 points they combined. Tatum was very, very efficient in that game, right? He got out moving. So when you look at how Boston kind of trickles from time to time, how much of that do you put on Tatum?
I put a lot of it because, again, he is the guy. No matter what, he's a quiet leader and all that, but he is the guy. And, the looks can be deceiving. I think he hit his first two threes in game three, and then he missed, like, I want to say six or seven in a row.
Yeah, he didn't hit another one.
Yes, exactly. That's my point. He was good from mid-range, and he got downhill. We're still waiting on Jason Tatum to find his shot. And that's what none of this matters. This round and even next round, I think they can handle the Pacers pretty easily or the Knicks, whoever comes out. It's all about, as we see with Minnesota, the margins. I think about those 8 points in 19 seconds that they scored. And if that happens, that could be the difference between winning and losing a ball game, which can be the difference between winning and losing a series. So Boston has to really tighten up on the details. They always say they learned the lesson, but they keep failing different quizzes. So, this is a pivotal moment in Boston franchise history.
He's James Holis, joins us every Monday to talk NBA basketball. A lot going on tonight. Boston-Cleveland, 5 o'clock. OKC-Dallas coming up at 7:30. James, as always, before I let you go, tell us where we can find more of your work.
At Snotty Drippin' on Twitter, on the X, or whatever they call it nowadays. I just talk basketball and life. And then, yeah, I'm part of the casual diehard pod with my buddy Jesse and my homegirl Ace. And we recap games, too, every week, so.
Love it. Always great to get you on, James. Enjoy the games tonight. We'll talk again soon.
Hey, if the Celtics lose, why don't you have me on tomorrow so I can rip them to shreds?
You know what? Deal. If they lose, you come on the show. You know what? Let's make this a rule. Every time the Celtics lose from here on out, you got to come on the next day. How about that?
And you give me 30 seconds, and I'll make sure I keep it PG-13.
James, it's always fun, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, bro.
We're going to pause for just a moment. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios, and it's here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.